Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Live out here at Barrel House at Bridgestone Arena because the Predators host the New Jersey Devils tonight on Captain's Night. Puck drop at 7 o'clock. We'll have your pregame coverage at 6 p.m., but make sure you get to the game tonight early if you're headed to Bridgestone Arena because there is going to be a whole lot of fanfare bringing back some former Predator captains. Joining us now is Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst and, of course, head coach of the Ensworth football team. Tim, always appreciate your time. First and foremost, did Kyle Shanahan make the right decision to receive an overtime on Sunday?
You know what? I'm actually fine with it. I've seen a lot of the reaction about, you know, knowing that you have four downs and all of that stuff. I think that what you don't know is, like, how long each possession is going to be. And because the Niners' possession was so long, and then quite honestly, the Chiefs' possession was a relatively long possession as well. Like, I think that when you make that decision, if you're Kyle Shanahan, I think that you think that there's probably going to be a legitimate third possession of time. So I kind of understand and am generally fine with, you know, you don't know how it's all going to play out for him to make that decision at that moment.
ESPN NFL analyst Tim Hasselbeck is with us. Speaking of that, Tim, this was one thing we were throwing around yesterday, and one thing I was wondering to myself while watching the game. Why is there a game clock in overtime?
Yeah, well, if you're going to match, you know, if you're going to be able to match, you know, scores, which you can. I know that there's been a lot of heat on Kyle Shanahan, and I get that the, you know, the rules evolve in the National Football League. They've changed. But I think in fairness to him, you know, with a second-year quarterback who was drafted last overall the year he came out, he led his team on two go-ahead fourth-quarter drives and a go-ahead overtime drive. And only because the NFL decided to change overtime rules just a few years ago is he not a Super Bowl champion.
I'm
not one of these. I'm looking at Kyle Shanahan exactly the way I looked at Andy Reid in Philadelphia when everyone said Andy wasn't good enough to win at all. And I thought, this guy's a really good coach. Like, he absolutely is good enough. I feel that same way about Kyle Shanahan. And then on top of it, listen, he's an offensive guy, offensive-minded head coach. His defensive coordinators keep getting hired to become head coaches. So, you know, I just, I don't know. I don't think I'm on board with this, hey, Kyle Shanahan lost it. He can't win a big one, and he's given up leads. I don't think I can subscribe to that.
When you consider who he's lost to in the Super Bowl, in the three Super Bowls he's lost, both as a coach and a coordinator, well, it's Brady, Mahomes, and Mahomes, two of the best quarterbacks to ever play the sport. So, you know, with keeping that in mind, how this is a copycat league and every team wants to replicate what a Super Bowl champion does. Well, you can't replicate what Patrick Mahomes does. Not everybody can just have their own Patrick Mahomes. So how does a team do it? How does a team, you know, win a Super Bowl, get past Patrick Mahomes when they don't have that elite quarterback?
You know what? And this is going to sound terrible, but you know what you need? You need a little bit of luck. Like,
yeah, honestly.
And I'm saying, like, you know, I had a coach one time say, look, it's a funny shaped ball. Going to bounce funny sometimes. And, like, you just think about it. They missed an extra point. What? Like, how'd you miss an extra point? Like, that's the difference in the game. Hey, you had a punt return where, you know, one of the guys on your punt return team, you know, he gets hit in the leg with the football on a bad punt. Like, what? You need a little bit of luck. You need David Tyree to catch the ball in his helmet. You need, you know, Ben Roethlisberger after, you know, Jerome Bettis fumbles on the goal line, you know, to make a play on Nick Harper, you know, that gets you to the Super Bowl. Like, you need a little bit of luck. Like, there is good fortune in it. Look, Tom Brady's got seven, sure. But, like, he needed Malcolm Butler to do something uncommon on a unique situation, right? Like, you need a little bit of luck. And so it's like, what's the difference? Like, to me, the margin's that small when you get to the Super Bowl sometimes, right? You need your right tackle to actually block Chris Jones on the final third down, offensive third down play you had in overtime, because Brandon Ayuk is going to get the first down and he may score. But instead, Brock Purdy's got to throw it away because you literally don't block the best defensive player on the field. That wasn't designed by Kyle Shanahan. That was a mental error, in someone on the offense. So I think you need a little bit of luck, and it didn't go their way.
We'll talk with Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst and head coach of the Innsworth Tigers. Tim, along those lines, I think sometimes, when you see a game, because we talked about the game the day after, and I described it as it's hard for me to pick out who didn't do what, or, mm-hmm. this guy played bad, that's the reason why they lost. Because if you look at it, Brock Purdy played well, Mahomes played well, their defense, Kansas City, played well, San Fran's defense played well for the most part. But then when that happens, I think people start to nitpick certain things. Like, to me, football is about executing and stopping teams from executing what they want. That's basically the crux of it, 101. That's what needs to happen. I think in this game, it happened to an extent, and Kansas City was able to stop, San Fran from executing what they wanted to execute on third and three in overtime. And on the other side, the San Francisco defense wasn't able to stop Patrick Mahomes, because Patrick Mahomes became a football player, not just a quarterback, but he became a football player and running a football too. That's why I think people now go to, well, it's Shanahan's fault because he decided to take the ball in overtime instead of deferring with them. I don't think necessarily that's the case, and it seems like you're sort of leaning toward that too, because there were other things that happened in the game, even though it was a good game, that was beyond what Kyle Shanahan did in overtime.
Yeah, I do think that sometimes, and like listen, this is a receiver. Like, sometimes somebody covered you, and quarterback made a great throw, and because he made a great throw, and you were able to make the catch, it was like, hey, was that the DB's fault? Or is it like, hey, man, like, we need to tip our cap to you. Like, good job. Like, I think there's an element of, listen, Kansas City's not a zone read team. Well, guess what they did? In the beginning of the third quarter, they kind of stumble onto a zone read play where Patrick Mahomes rips off like a 15-yard run. And guess what? Fourth and one in overtime, they came back to the same exact design. And then they came back to a very similar design on the game-winning touchdown. Like, sometimes you just have to be like, look, we did a great job defensively for much of the game, but we are going against one of the greatest offensive coaches of all time. Arguably one of the greatest quarterback of all time, maybe, when it's all said and done. Like, to think you're going to, hold them to 3 points in the first half and then hold them to 3 points again in the second half, like, that's not realistic. Like, I think it's sometimes you have to be like, yeah, like, they're really good too. So I think sometimes you can give credit to somebody and not say, hey, it's, Nick Bosa's fault. It's Kyle Shanahan's fault. Like, sometimes it's just like, you know what? They got us. Like, you beat us with your play call and your player.
Now, do you make a big deal about players not knowing that specific rule in regards to overtime? This is a rule they just implemented. Now, if the head coach had came out, Kyle Shanahan, and say, listen, I didn't know those rules. Now, I may have a problem with that because you're the head coach. But the players, people don't understand, like, players are not sitting in meetings going over the rules. They're not. We know the basic rules, but that's about it, because we don't think of it as we're going on the field and we're running plays and we're thinking about, oh, man, it's overtime, so we get an extra possession. Oh, but it's playoffs, so we get – so it changes from what it was in the regular season. Players don't think like that. Hell, the head – I mean, the quarterback don't think like that. But all of a sudden now it's, oh, these players, they should have known and this and that. And I'm thinking, like, how many rules did y'all know when y'all were playing? Probably not half of them.
I definitely think that, and you know this as a player, like, and you practice situations, and you want your team to understand situations, right? We're in the red zone. This is 4-minute offense. This is 2-minute offense. So I don't think there's any question that you want your players to understand situations. Can you cover every single situation? No, you can't. And what you try to do is you try to spend your time on the ones that, like, you know you're going to face. So, you know, a unique overtime scenario, are you making sure that you're hammering that home all the time? No, you're not. You aren't. And I think a lot of times coaches just make the assessment of, look, I would rather be positive that, you know, McCall Hardman, who didn't start the season on our football team, knows of all of our 2-minute signals. That's more important to me than if he understands the nuances of sudden death overtime, right? Like, I think it does come down to that. Like, that's really the case. And so it's not surprising to me, especially when you get outside of positions like quarterback and maybe a few key positions on the defensive side.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us. And Tim, I didn't think that I could be more impressed than I already was. We had this conversation a lot yesterday with Patrick Mahomes himself. But when you get that third Super Bowl, you get a back-to-back. Like, he's only 28. He's separating himself even from other greats. And we were just talking about the uniqueness of his game. And how – and D-Mace brought up Aaron Rodgers, and we sort of had a great discussion yesterday of they have that improvisational thing, but I even feel like Mahomes is at a different level with the different arm angles and throwing the ball left-handed and throwing it with two hands, like almost a basketball shot, like things that have never been done and cannot be taught.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think he's changed the game. He started doing things, you know, the way Brett Favre kind of did at some points where you're like, you would never coach somebody to do it. Now, the difference with Brett was it often led to a bunch of turnovers, right? It felt super reckless at times. Like with Patrick, it doesn't feel that way, right? It doesn't feel as reckless. And so, you know, there's that element of it where, I mean, watch kids in college warm up now, you know, like, people are practicing throws that really you shouldn't make. It'd be like a basketball player, you know, just practicing half-court shots. It's like,
right.
Well,
I mean, like Steph Curry really has sort of changed the game.
Correct.
In that same
Correct.
Respect.
Yeah. We're like, hey, we really actually don't want you doing that. And so I think that he's changed the game in that regard. But then I also think that his knack for doing other things in terms of knowing when to run and how he's played in some of these moments where he's got to bring a team back, it's remarkable. It really is. And there is a competitive, you know, awareness and fire to him that is not normal. It's and even other really great quarterbacks, you know, maybe don't have it now. And I think, look, I think, you know, like we probably all agree that look, Brady changed the game in a different way, and he has that competitive awareness and ability to play great and slow things down in the biggest moment. But I'll still go back to something I said before. Like, for Brady to get to 7, there needs to be some good fortune as well. And I think a similar thing with Mahomes. In order for him to continue to chase the way he's had it and get to 3 Super Bowls before he's 29 years old, there needs to be some good fortune for him also. So, look, I think that is going on, you know, with him, and I think that he's changing the game. And I think that, look, being surrounded by a great coach and a good supporting cast and then having some things fall your way are going to need to happen for him to reach 7 and be able to, I guess, be in the conversation of, yeah, he's even better than Brady.
You got me thinking with when you start to see other people try to emulate some things that Mahomes is doing. And I think about Will Levis, because Levis has a little bit of that arm strength where he can change arm angles. He can throw off the back foot. And Mahomes is so good at it. Like even that last throw on the last play, it almost looks like you could see the baseball footwork. It's almost like he's playing second base and he's making a throw. There's But you like the traditional way of teaching mechanics is repeat the same delivery, 7-step drop, 5-step drop, timing. And so that happy median is what you're shooting for. But I do wonder if, like you say, he's changing the game. What can be taught? And you know, what can you teach Levis specifically, who's got he's got the athletic ability to do this, but you know, can he get success? Does he win the battles when he tries to make throws like that?
Yeah, I think it's a great, you know, it's a great kind of discussion of like, okay, well, what are you trying to make someone to be? Like, you can't make Kirk Cousins Patrick Mahomes. But Kirk Cousins being the best version of Kirk Cousins, you can be pretty good. And you can win a lot of football games, right? And so I think that there has to be an understanding of, look, and this is how Andy Reid coached my brother. When my brother got to Green Bay and Brett was there, he would, you know, show him something that, that Brett did on film, and he'd be like, do not do that. Like, I don't want you doing that. Like, you see that completion that he just made to Antonio Freeman? You're not allowed. Like, you, that's not for you. But what is for you, watch his toughness. Watch the way that he leads the team. Watch the way that he works, and everybody sees the way that he works. Like, watch the leadership. Like, do that. And so, like, I don't think it's a good idea, because Will Levis, as talented as he is physically, he's not Patrick Mahomes. And, like, and so he shouldn't try to be. And so I think that, that's a dangerous path to go down, to say, like, yeah, hey, see that crazy play that he made there? I want you to make that too. I don't think it's for everybody. I think it's trying to really hone in and identify what your guy does well, building into that, finding the weaknesses, trying to build those back up. Like, and then the leadership component of it, yeah, like learn from everybody.
ESPN NFL analyst Tim Hasselbeck is with us. To me, so Paul Daner, who covers the Cincinnati Bengals for The Athletic, he reported that T. Higgins and the Cincinnati Bengals, they're at a crossroads of what this upcoming season looks like for T. Higgins. And one thing that is on the table is a potential tag and trade. The Titans could be in the wide receiver market. T. Higgins, of course, has a relationship with Brian Callahan. Brian Callahan knows what makes T. Higgins tick. What is the future for T. Higgins? Where is he in 2024? And if there is a trade market for T. Higgins, what does that trade market look like?
Yeah, I think the tag and trade thing is real, and then, you know, path to an extension, just because things are going to get expensive in Cincinnati quickly. I think there'll also be, you know, a market. This is a good receiver class by most people's account, you know, coming out. But I think if you're looking for, you know, a number one receiver, T. Higgins can be that. You know, he's young. He's been relatively healthy. He's, you know, he's been super productive. You know, he fits the profile in terms of size and speed and all of that. And so I don't think he'll be back in Cincinnati, because I don't think that he'll want to play on the tag. And I think that, you know, it'll give Cincinnati an opportunity to get something, you know, for him. So, and I would think that if you were going to start to just match things up, I would think that Tennessee would be on, you know, the top of the list in terms of probably destinations that he would be comfortable with. And then, you know, the thing I would just would say is, like, I think there'll also be competition, right? Like, New England's going to have a lot of money, and so there'll be a desire there. Houston is a team that, you know, has so many young players that they're going to have money to spend, and getting better at receiver, even though they had young guys play well, I think will be a desire. So I could see the Titans being a landing spot, but I think there'll be a lot of competition.
What do you think is a fair trade package?
Oh, gosh. You know, it's so hard because, you know, you're also signing the guy to a long-term deal. But, yeah, I mean, I think that if you just were to look at, you know, remember the final details, you know, on like A.J. Brown, but it's going to be more than that. So, yeah, I mean, you're definitely are kind of in a scenario where it probably is some form of first-round pick. and more, would be my guess. So, look, I think it could easily go that path. But at the same time, like, you also are potentially resetting the wide receiver market. Remember, Justin Jefferson's up for he's eligible for a contract extension. I think he's already been vocal about saying that he wants to reset the wide receiver market. Mm-hmm. And so I think the wide receiver money is, because of some, you know, guys like the guys we're talking about, I think it's going to take a pretty good jump.
Last one for you, Tim, quickly. Is Ryan Tannehill a Steeler next year?
Ooh. Somebody's going to be there. Now, look, I think they prefer Justin Fields to Ryan Tannehill, but I think there's a very good shot that he's there, yes.
Hmm. Interesting.
Fields, that's really... So Pickett, we just don't think is...
I think that there's going to be... Pickett's going to have a little sweat on his brow going to training camp next year, yeah.
To say the least.
Old small hands, Kenny. Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst, and, of course, the head coach at Ensworth. Tim, appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us.
You got it. See you guys.
Appreciate it. Tim Hasselbeck, he is the very best. Appreciate him for stopping by. Coming up next, it is Captain's Night at Bridgestone Arena. We'll see some familiar faces back in the building tonight. We'll talk some Preds coming up next, some moves that the Predators made over the last couple of days. What does that mean for this team in the short term before the trade deadline? What could this mean for the team for in terms of a potential playoff push? My goodness. We'll get into that coming up next. And, of course, your phones as well. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Caroline, Willie, D. Mace. We're brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet.